This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Hello and welcome to Little Gold Men, the award season podcast from Vanity Fair.
I am delighted and proud to introduce him as Academy Award winner.
And the Oscar goes to...
And the Oscar goes to...
The winner, it's a tie.
And any little girl who's practicing their speech on the telly, you never know.
Mom, I just want an Oscar.
I am Katie Rich. I'm here for today's interview episode with Rebecca Ford.
Hi.
And with David Canfield.
Hello.
We have two interviews today, and Rebecca, we're going to hear yours first. You talked to Ashley Park, who I think a lot of people have been fans of from Emily in Paris and other things for a while, but I've really clocked into her because she's having a pretty fantastic year between Beef and now Joyride. I assume you guys had plenty to talk about.
We did. You know, she's had a really impressive career on Broadway. She was nominated for a Tony for Mean Girls. She was well known on the stage, but she's really just like blowing up on film and TV right now. And so I got to see Joyride a while back before South by Southwest, and I just found it so bold and funny, and the comedy is so raunchy, which I think is really the hardest type of comedy to do and do right. So mm-hmm. I was really excited to talk to her about it.
Yeah, it seems like it was, kind of an ideal South by premiere where it's like this like big raunchy comedy, but it's a bold movie in a lot of ways, not just because it's like an entirely Asian-led cast, which, as we know, is still a real rarity. It seems like something people should seek out, even if raunchy comedy isn't automatically the first thing they'd go for.
Yeah, I highly recommend seeing it in theaters. It also stars Stephanie Hsu, who we all know from Everything Everywhere All at Once. She was Oscar nominated, and a couple other really funny actors. And there's some surprising appearances as well throughout the movie. So it's a really fun one to see in theaters. So I definitely recommend that experience.
Well, now that No Hard Feelings did pretty well, I feel like the summer of raunch comedy might be upon us. It seems like a good thing.
I hope so. Let's
yeah.
do it.
Yeah. Let's hear your conversation with Ashley Park.
I'm so excited to welcome Ashley Park, who stars in Joyride. It's a wild ride of a comedy that hits theaters this Friday. Ashley, thank you for joining me.
Hi.
I got to see Joyride a while back, like before South by Southwest, and I laughed so hard. I feel like that's such a unique experience these days to really like crack up in a theater. So I'm curious for you, what was your first impression reading the script?
I remember I got the script. It was actually like maybe a week or two right before the pandemic started. I had done The King and I on Broadway with Daniel Dae Kim, and he had become such a great like mentor and champion of mine, just like really believing me in me and encouraging me for a while. And he had texted me one day and was like, oh, Adele Lim, who did Crazy Rich Asians, and Teresa Hsiao, who does Nora from Queens, and Cherry, they have this concept in the script, and I think it's going to be greenlit by Lionsgate and Point Grey. And they asked if I knew an actress who had as much heart as she has humor. And he was like, I thought of you, because I really only had done Broadway at that point. I think I had filmed Emily in Paris season one, but it hadn't come out yet. And so I was like, oh, absolutely. And the project was called Joy Fuck Club. And so mm-hmm. I got a version of the script before I talked to Adele. We just FaceTimed. And I, first of all, just the title in itself, but I was really blown away. I think I had like 10 minutes and I ended up canceling an appointment because I read it all in one sitting on my bed in my studio in Midtown. And I, the same reaction as you had when you watched it, I don't think I've read a script where I laughed out loud that much. And I really cried hard at the part that I'm sure you know what I'm talking about too. And I was just like, oh my gosh, I remember like distinctly feeling like I really felt like I know four different characters by the end of it and their relationships. And, you know, this is one of the, I think they must have gone through almost 100 different versions of the script. And so that was a previous one. I think there are water buffalo in that one, but there are certain like stronghold pillars of the plot that definitely stuck throughout. And yeah, I think I was so blown away because I was so excited that this was even happening. And then to read the script and see how smart and funny and nuanced it was even at that point, I was really blown away that like Lionsgate and Point Grey was interested in this. And I was just really happy that it was good. And I remember really feeling like, oh my gosh, I would love, you know, I hadn't done that much screen work at that point. So I was just like, I would love a shot at this, but even if I'm not involved, this is definitely a movie I will go watch first thing when it comes out. And I was just like so excited that it was happening in general.
And so your character Audrey, you know, she starts out as this woman who seemingly has it all together and is going on this business trip, and her friends and end up going along with her. What did you like most about her journey?
I liked, first of all, and I think collaborating with the creators too, we really worked on this, but I was really interested in the fact that she has like flaws and growth to go through as well. And to see a character really go through the trajectory of not only getting to explore so many different parts of like emotion and like the vibrancy of like a full human, but I think for me, what I really connected to is understanding right away that especially Teresa, Adele, and Cherry must understand some of the things that I was first starting to reflect on in terms of being in an industry and in a world that was very much built by, built for, you know, white people or people who didn't look like me. And all of the negotiation that Audrey goes through and like really finding a way to be like genuinely ambitious and excited to be in this world that she really had no part in at first. Like, I really, really connected with that. And also just the fact that part of her identity of like, you know, she really, it wasn't that she was trying to ever deny being Asian, but she just really had never faced that part of her identity and was fine with it. And I think that it really mirrored that time in my life too, where I was like, oh, this is not just like a quality of me. This is a big part of my identity. And I was like, really happy to really like infuse that into building this character. And I think I loved the fact that she was, you know, not only like the straight man or the protagonist in it, is just that she really does go on this like big journey and have very specific relationships. And I felt like there was a lot to like build off of there as well.
Yeah, I love this ensemble. We have Stephanie Hsu, Sherry Kolla, and Sabrina Wu who are in it with you. And the four of you have such great chemistry on screen. Did you spend a lot of time bonding before filming? How did you sort of develop that relationship?
We love hearing that, and, you know, and doing press right now too. It's something that's come up a lot, you know, about the chemistry of us four. And I think the best thing about it is it wasn't until we've been asked about it that I even thought about our chemistry, because it was such a given. It was like such from the very first moment we all four met together. And I mean, we did our chemistry reads and auditions like still in the height of COVID. I was in Paris filming season two. So I would get home from filming and at 10 p.m. log on to Zoom and do these chemistry reads and stuff. And I think that the fact that even the four of us not ever having spent time together in person, they could see on their Zoom screen, oh, this is the group. And I think that that comes with like the four of us are extremely hardworking so that it's easy to play. And then we are like very wholesome people. I have been so excited to celebrate the three of them, especially since we've filmed this. And I feel the same way with them. And as cheesy as it might sound, like this really has been a family from the get-go. We all felt like we were long lost cousins. And like, it's just been like the most honest and like rambunctious and vibrant like group when we're together. And we just, we did bond a lot while, you know, you would think we'd be tired of each other after filming all day together. And the amount of times I fell asleep on the couches of the three of their apartments in Vancouver says a lot in itself. And we were just very comfortable, always in PJs and playing games and all of this. So it was really magical. And it feels very nice to be going through this journey with the three of them, because we all feel very grounded in the real friendship that we've created with each other.
When I did a piece on the film earlier and I talked to you guys and you know, you were all pointing out like you've done a ton of really great supporting work, but here you are being the leads of a movie, which is a different experience. And I'm curious how that played on you mentally to sort of know that you were leading this project.
Yeah, it's so funny. It's in the same way that I started on Broadway in the ensemble and as an understudy, and I really worked hard and learned a lot and then earned a place in different kinds of roles. I'm really glad that this is the first time I've been number one on a call sheet or been the lead or had a movie center on like my story as the protagonist. And I think that, first of all, it made for such a healthy and amazing set because the four of us are so used to being supportive and making sure that everyone else's stories and everyone else's moments are being heard. And so, I mean, there were moments when everybody was like, wait, no, Ashley, like, this is like, you're allowed to take up space, which is so funny when I would hear that because I would think, oh my gosh, I've been so ready to take up space. But when you've kind of spent three decades not, and finding genuine happiness and like value and being supporting, then it's almost like hard to take that conditioning off of yourself. And even when I first read this script, I realized now that, you know, because I didn't know anything about it, I didn't know what my character would go through or anything. So I was just so used to getting a script and automatically looking at the supporting characters. And I really was like, oh, am I more of a Lolo or a Cat or a Dead? I wonder which one. And then at a certain point in the film, you know, when it becomes obvious that a Korean actress would play this role, I was like, oh my gosh, are they considering me for this? And, you know, I have one younger sister, her name's Audrey too. So there's just so many moments of kismet in this, but even on the, I think I was really just focused on making like the best comedy, and especially for Audrey, the really fun but tricky thing was really earning the emotional and heart of the story as well, because we're in such this like wild, debaucherous comedy. And so having smart writers and like Adele Cherry and Teresa really champion like not having to navigate explaining to them what someone, an Asian American who grew up in a white community, might have felt like, really helped in figuring out the puzzle of how to make the story and Audrey's trajectory of her character work. But even on the last day, there's a tradition on set most of the time where the leader, the number one on the call sheet when you rap, makes some kind of speech. And I've never had this happen, but I like froze. Like I couldn't even take up that space because I think I was still processing, wow, we just finished this movie and I was the lead in it. And I don't have to apologize for that. And I think actually Sherry ended up making the speech. Like she gives such great speeches. We say a speech every night and is a great speaker in that way. But I remember that stuck with me for a while because I remember being on sets and being like, oh, one day, like I'll be so happy to be able to do that. And it was almost like I froze because I so wasn't used to it.
I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go. There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. But on Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's a new podcast from NPR where I invite actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to talk about some of life's biggest questions. Listen to Wildcard wherever you get your podcasts, only from NPR.
And you mentioned the comedy. I think this kind of comedy is really hard to do. Sort of this raunchy, balls to the wall comedy can be, I think, really vulnerable because you do a lot of alts and you have to like, you don't know, I don't know how you know what's going to work. How did it feel to be in those scenes that were so wild and trying to deliver?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was really helpful that, you know, from my three co-stars to all of the, I interacted with a lot of the cameo performers and a lot of people who came in for a couple days. It was helpful, first of all, just because everybody had a really great energy and was game for anything and was great at listening, was not forceful. And there was just like no ego, really, in terms of the acting. But I think in terms of comedy, I'm glad that I've done stuff like Emily in Paris and like other comedies, because I think what's shocking when you spend so long in the theater is not having that magic interaction with the live audience right then, and you get feedback from them right away and you know how to continue on with the story. And so I think that if this had been my first time on screen in a comedy, I would have probably melted being like, wait, did that work? Like, why is no one laughing? What's happening? And I think what was nice is comedy comes from, I think, two things. It's first of all, like the craft of timing and all of those magic things that are happening and like the writing, but also really understanding like the intention of a character. And so I think that like really approaching it almost academically sometimes and being like, what is my character doing? What do they want? What are they thinking right now? And how do I make an audience laughs, I've found, when they relate to something that they're seeing. And I think what was tricky about this and really fun is that there's so many plot driven mishaps and things that happen that are funny. But I think it's really what's been rewarding to see with audiences is like you react to, or they react to and connect to the characters' reactions to, because they really understand what the characters are thinking and such. So I think it was really fun that we just got to be brave. There's a lot of also, you know, it's my first time doing a lot of intimacy stuff, my first time with a lot of this kind of content and debaucherous stuff and even physical comedy, having throw up in my mouth, all of this stuff. And I think that, first of all, really trusting the creators and the producers that at no point would my body or my person be the butt of the joke. Instead, you know, we're just butts and jokes, you know, and that they were all to further the story or to deepen what the audience understands of Audrey as a character so that we can get to a certain point in the film. I think that having that trust made it so much more comfortable to just really go balls to the wall a little bit.
And the comedy is so strong, but also I think the way it explores identity and, as you're saying, like has this heart to it, makes this story really special. Did going through this experience shift your own perspective when it comes to identity or your family history or sort of looking at those issues in any way?
Oh, absolutely. It really did. You know, for a while, especially in the Broadway world, I think around like Mean Girls and such, and or even just in auditioning in general, and walking through life in this world, I'd always associated, if someone said to me, oh my gosh, I totally forgot you're Asian, I would take that as a compliment growing up, because I thought, oh, if they're not seeing that I'm Asian, if they're not right away saying you're the Asian person, that means they must be seeing a different quality about me. And that means that they must be seeing like the human that I am. And now, especially with this film, I've never been in something that was not only where I was surrounded by Asian people, but like led by them, and it was created by them. And a lot of the supervisors were Asian. And I don't know if if anyone else grew up this way, but like, I remember thinking, oh, like, my gosh, if like I'm with a bunch of Asian friends and we're loud in a restaurant, like people are going to think that Asians are weird or anything. Like, we have all these preconceived notions that we've grown up with. To get to go out to eat every night and be surrounded by these Asian, you know, peers that I just like adore and think the world of and who are good at their jobs, it just really was a game changer for me. And it made me realize like the standard can be at that too. And I think now it's not that I want people to forget that I'm Asian. It's very much with this film, it's like I want them to say, oh, I see everything about you and I understand you and you're Asian, you know, like you're not seeing me in spite of being Asian. You're seeing me and I am also Asian. And I think that, yeah, it really was my first time getting to be with all Asian people. And it felt, and not saying that I haven't enjoyed every other thing that I've done and other people that I've gotten to work with, but there is a different like nuance to it of just like not having to explain yourself or having things already explained to you in a way.
Yeah. Yeah, I grew up in a very white community, and obviously my name is Rebecca Ford, and I feel like I've dealt with sort of that same experience, and it really speaks to how your world opens up with representation and these sorts of opportunities. So.
Yeah, I mean, and that I think that's why also I was so hungry to even just be a part of something like Beef in a small way too, and just I remember seeing the script and being like, oh, I didn't know that other people had this kind of Korean American church experience growing up, or that I'm allowed to talk about it. And so many nuances of that. I love Steven and Allie and Sunny and such. And so I think that also, like, you know, what's great is not just seeking out, oh, I want to be part of an Asian project. It's like, I want to be part of a great TV show. I want to be part of an amazing, like iconic comedy. And they happen to be in an Asian perspective and they happen to be universal to everybody who watches it. I think that's really shifted my goals in a way.
Yeah. It's funny. I was going to bring up Beef because obviously that show was such a breakout hit and such an incredible cast. And is there anyone that you really like learned from being a part of that experience, whether it was one of the other actors or storytellers?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think I loved it because I learned a lot just like in general. I had most of my scenes with Ali Wong and also Maria Bello, who's amazing.
Yeah,
but
she's so good.
Yeah, she's so great. And she, both of them are so experienced in different parts of the industry as well. And I think I didn't get to interact as much with Steven on screen, but just having his presence as a producer and around set, and I'm very close to Ali Wong now. And I think that anybody, even, you know, just in terms of, I've had really great examples of how to conduct yourself on a set and as like a leader. And I think that working with them really reinforced a lot of that for me.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, you're so accomplished on stage, but I'm really excited to see this moment for you in film and TV, you know, between Emily in Paris, Joyride, Beef. How would you sort of summarize what's going on with you right now?
Oh my gosh, I don't know. I think I would summarize it as I'm very grateful, you know. Yeah. I really did, like, in a very true sense, but kind of like, you know, if I look at, and I didn't mean for it to be this way necessarily, but even like my Broadway credits, it's like Mamma Mia was this like long-running jukebox musical. King and I was this revival of Rodgers and Hammerstein. I got to do a Sondheim. I got to do a play, and I got to do an original musical based on like pop culture zeitgeist, Mean Girls. And I think with everything, I was just very hungry to prove to myself and, yeah, really just like, well, what can I learn the most from? What would be the most challenging? And I think what I've enjoyed, and I think it probably comes from like growing up and really not wanting to be put in a box and really wanting to just surprise myself and other people. Oh, she does that too. Or, oh, I thought she was this thing, you know, like after I did The King and I couldn't be seen for anything comedic for almost a year, you know, and just to, I think people are very comfortable, especially with Asian faces, being like, oh, I get you now. You're the funny one, so we'll put you here. Oh, you are the sexy one, I'll put you here. You're the dramatic one, you know? And so I think with film and TV, I just got to film this indie in Utah by Nora Kirkpatrick, and this is the most wonderful cast of three people, David Diggs, Josh Gad, and Alexandra Daddario. And like, really just like learning from people as humans. I'm like very hungry to work with just like really smart and like beautiful people like on the inside. And I think that even that too, I'm just taking, I guess, everything in stride right now, and trying to just be grounded through it and do good work and do parts that I'm really interested in, roles now that really explore people's relationships with each other and like ask questions in the stories but don't give an answer. You know, I think that's really easy to try to push answers down people's throats when they watch stuff, but it's more interesting to me to like start a conversation in a way.
Yeah, that makes sense. We're almost out of time, but I wanted to wrap up by asking what it's been like to watch this movie with an audience. I assume you saw it at South By, but
yeah,
anywhere else you've seen it?
It's been so actually, you know, I think when I was in theater, I had a really hard time watching videos of myself or anything. And with TV and film, I've gotten a little bit more used to it because it's kind of, it's nice that it's not in your control anymore. It's like, I can't do anything about what the take they picked or whatever. But other stuff I've done, I've maybe watched everything once, but this movie I've watched a few times now because I think, and I'm so glad that Lionsgate and Point Grey were determined to make this a theatrical release, because I think a comedy like this has to be in a shared space with people beside you laughing and crying. And I think every audience, like South by Southwest was so different from Camfest, and San Fran was so different from the LA premiere. And I've enjoyed watching it just because people are always laughing throughout, but it's interesting to observe. Also, there's so many things that happen that sometimes people are laughing over the next thing, and just like what people respond to. And it's been, I don't know, I think that's what I miss most about theater, is having that room full of people in that like shared journey for that one day or that, you know, that moment in time. And so I think that's what's been, it's been really enjoyable watching this, not because I'm watching it on my own screen, but it's because it's what the magic of like having it with those people at that time.
Okay, David, now we're going to hear your conversation with Glenn Howerton, who has been synonymous with It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia for, 15 years, for as long as that show's been on, for seemingly forever. But kind of like Ashley Park has been branching out a lot this year.
Yeah, he's the kind of villain antagonist of Blackberry, which is one of the best indies of the year so far. And he's kind of a revelation in it. He plays Jim Balsillie, who was a key figure investor in the founding of BlackBerry, which the film depicts that sort of shocking rise and fall story. And he's this incredibly animated, intense figure who, like Howerton, if you're familiar with his work on Sunny, he's a kind of a natural fit for. He plays that kind of type really well, but it's in a completely different context, and he really runs away with the movie. And when it hit theaters back in May, there was kind of a drumbeat of like, let's get him on the Oscar nomination circuit.
And, sure, and here he is.
Here he is 2 months later, and that seemed to build a little bit as the film's gone on VOD and had a pretty good life there.
Yeah, I feel like this is the time of year you get, you know, the best movies of the year so far list, and people like me who tune out of movies a little bit in the first half of the year because Oscar season isn't here yet. This is the ideal time to catch up with movies like BlackBerry, I think, when enough people have told you, you got to watch this. So it feels like now's a perfect time to talk to Glenn about it.
Yeah, this guy went to Juilliard, which I had no idea. And I think he's been waiting a very long time to be talked about or at least considered in this context. So he seems really excited and energized by it.
Yeah, well, I can't wait to hear it. Let's hear your conversation with Glenn Howerton.
We're here to talk about BlackBerry, which is, I think, one of the best movies of the year.
And oh, amazing. Thanks, man.
It's interesting to me that this movie has kind of lived a great life already, and it was made for not a lot of money. I'm curious how you've experienced just the rollout of it from the moment it was released.
Well, the truth is I haven't done a lot of movies. I haven't worked a lot in the film world, which is partially a byproduct of the fact that I've been just kind of mostly unavailable and mm-hmm. busy most of the time. I mean, there were always ways to carve out that time, but I only wanted to do it if it was for something that I was really excited about. I didn't want to work in film just for the sake of working in film. I wanted to work on good things. And, a lot of the stuff that I've done, honestly, has been with friends too, which I also love doing because it's just fun. So I've never done a movie, even honestly, this size where I was the lead. This was probably I think it was like close to 10 million Canadian, which I'm not exactly sure what that equates to. So it wasn't tiny, but for the scope of movie that it was a pretty small budget for sure. But IFC, who is our distributor in North America, and all the great support of Elevation in Canada and XYZ as well, they really saw something in the film, really got behind it, and really, put the PR engine to work and got people out to theaters to watch it. And now on VOD, a lot of people are watching it as well. So, I mean, the rollout for me has been really, really fun. I mean, we did a lot of premieres. I'm not used to going to so many premieres. We did the world premiere in Berlin, which was really, really exciting because it's such an incredible festival. The fact that we even got in is just blew my mind. We did the world premiere there. Then we did the U.S. premiere at South by Southwest. And then we did the Canadian premiere up in Toronto. And then we even did like an L.A. premiere, although that was a little bit smaller. It was kind of like a friends and family and industry people thing. So I've now seen the movie with an audience, three or four times.
Yeah, it's that's the way this goes when people like it.
Yeah, luckily.
Yeah. I'm curious because you haven't done a lot of film and this is such a great role that you really run away with. What is your reaction when it comes your way? Like, what does it feel like to see that on the page and to feel like you have the opportunity to get to do it?
I mean, I was honestly pretty blown away. The script was so good and the role was so, so incredible that sadly, my first thought was, why aren't they offering this to a bigger name in film?
Sure.
I hold some sway in the world of television, but in the world of film, I just felt like this is the kind of role that they could get a huge star to do because it was so juicy, in my mind at least. And that's just not what Matt Johnson, the director, wanted. He saw something in me as an actor. He's familiar with my work mostly in comedy. On It's Always Sunny and AP Bio and stuff like that. And he just saw what he wanted for that guy, which I find interesting because I can see the lineage between some of the characters that I've played and Jim in Blackberry, but it's slightly circuitous. And so it's nice when when you feel like somebody sees what you're capable of outside of what you've actually done.
Yeah. Had you felt that way before? You mentioned maybe feeling like it was an availability issue with some films, but were scripts like this coming your way too often? Or roles like this, scripts. I should say?
No. Honestly, no. It's tough to break out of the box a little bit. I think people see you doing comedy. And look, I mean, it's weird because before I did Sunny, I feel like most of the auditions I was going on and some of the work that I'd done was in dramatic films. And I remember at one point I was supposed to be auditioning for like this comedy show. And this is probably in the early 2000s. And I remember the casting director feedback that we got from my agent. They wouldn't even see me because they were like, well, he doesn't do comedy. He's not a comedy guy. He's a drama guy. Because I guess I'd come into that casting office and done a bunch of dramatic auditions. And you know, so they're like, this guy doesn't know how to do comedy. Like, why are we, you know, so they wouldn't even see me for it. And that's just, you know, that's just the nature of the business. I understand it. I get it. I've been guilty of it myself, like seeing people in comedies and being like, well, wait, that's a comedy person. That's what they do, you know, only to discover that, you know, there's more layers there. But I hadn't been getting a lot of scripts like that that were that good, that juicy, that even though it's funny and it is very funny,
it is.
That it's, you know, it's played, the movie's funny, but we don't play it like a comedy.
Yeah. Did you feel a certain degree, not necessarily of pressure, but of, you know, meeting the moment, say, when you do get a part like this, and you obviously have a great filmmaker behind you of, you know, getting it right?
It's a good question and a totally fair question. I think I had a couple of things going in my favor. One, because I have been doing this for a long time, it wasn't that I had all the confidence in the world that I could pull it off as much, although I did, but it wasn't so much that as it was that I made a decision to be confident that I could do it. So I had to kind of work myself up a little bit and remind myself, you do know what you're doing. You do know how to do this. It's been a while since you've worked this hard in drama, but you have before. You have it in you. So I there was a lot of like positive self-talk in the lead up to filming and certainly in the process of working on it, not being too hard on myself about the process. I only had about 3 weeks to prepare, so I didn't have, it's not like I had, you know, the luxury of, you know, having a few months to really, really dig in. So I had to be really calculated and specific about how I was going to spend my preparation time. So I had to choose to be not too hard on myself about the things that I wasn't able to do, that I would have liked to have done, and just trust that, when I got on set, that it would be there for me when I needed it. And a lot of that was having a lot of really in-depth conversations with Matt.
Yeah.
The director.
So what did those conversations look like? What kind of things did you guys get into in terms of the characterization?
Well, a lot of it was getting on the same page about the tone of the script, making sure that we were on the same page about what was really driving the character overall, what that internal engine is. Like, what does this guy really ultimately want? Even if he doesn't know what it is, like, what does he ultimately want? You know, a lot of like really basic kind of actory stuff. But also, you know, I'm a big believer. I mean, it's not like what I'm about to say is controversial. It's the way it should be, but like your character is always in service of the overall story. So I needed to understand from him what he felt like the movie was about, what it was for him, and really to get a better idea of how I'm meant to fit in with the overall picture. So a lot of focus on the script itself. One of the things that I did is I just read the script over and over and over and over and over again so that I knew it inside and out. So anytime I had to step into a scene, I knew the script so well that I knew what came before and I knew what came after. I mean, you still forget, you get on set and you're like, wait, where am I coming from? You know, but it was really just asking a lot of questions, a lot of dialogue. And, you know, Matt's such a great director. He was also open to all of my ideas and my interpretation of what he'd written. And a lot of times was sort of surprised at my interpretation and sort of thought, oh, that that's not what I intended, but I like that. That's better. You know, so he was extremely collaborative in that sense. And that feels good too, because then it feels like you're not an extra step removed from the character. You're a little bit more a part of the process.
Hey, I'm Brian Stelter, host of Inside the Hive from Vanity Fair. This week, with the help of Dan Adler and Olivia Nuzzi, we're going inside the media circus swirling around Donald Trump's criminal trial.
People want coverage of Donald Trump. They're sort of shades of 2015, 2016. I found it to be a total break from the reaction to a lot of Trump coverage in the last 2 years.
Join me, Brian Stelter, on Inside the Hive from Vanity Fair. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
How did you find the pacing of it, like, day to day? I mean, watching the movie, it feels so packed, and it's really riveting, and that's really hard to do on an indie budget oftentimes, but it pulls it off to such an extent that I'm wondering what it felt like to pull that part of it off.
It was a big script. It was, I'm trying to remember exactly. I want to say the script was about almost 140 pages.
Wow.
So, which is long, and, you know, for folks out there that don't know, the average script is, you know, 100 pages, like, you know, unless you're dealing with like an auteur who regularly makes 2.5 hour to 3 hour long films, the script is usually around 100 pages, you know. So 140 is big. I mean, it's a thick manuscript. So it was definitely a lot to bite off in, but we had a pretty decent amount of time. I mean, we shot for 7 weeks, which is pretty good for
That's a lower budget film.
Yeah. So we had, I wouldn't say the luxury of time. There was a lot to get, but the way he chose to shoot it offered a lot of opportunity to cover things in a very organic and quick way, so that every setup didn't have to be super, super dialed in. We could find it a little bit in the performances and in the camera work and all that. So it was daunting, but the team that put the film together had put so much thought and work into it that everybody was really prepared on the day. So we never felt rushed. We never felt pressured in a way that it was like, we're going to run out of time on this day or anything like that.
Hmm. In terms of playing a real guy, obviously Matt is a really particular filmmaker, very specific style. I love reading about like you shaving your head consistently, for instance, but like, to what extent did you want to be accurate, for lack of a better word, and kind of balance that with your own interpretation?
I wasn't concerned with being accurate in terms of the physicality of the character or the vocalization of the character, its speech patterns and things like that, simply because Jim Balsillie is just not widely known enough to where I felt like I needed to do a Jim Balsillie, embodiment, impersonation, I guess, would be a slightly more sort of sketchy way of putting it. But so it was less about being true to the real Jim and more about being true to the script. I, you know, of course, the script is based on a book. So understanding the story, understanding the book, understanding all the facts as I knew them, combined with the fact that I knew that Matt Miller and Matt Johnson, who wrote the script together, had done tons of work and research outside of the book itself. So I knew that they had worked very diligently in how they approached the script. So I chose to focus more on being true to the script than being true to whatever was, you know, the real life events. Hmm.
The connection for me between this character and, say, Dennis or a number of your other characters is the level of intensity that with which they operate, how they operate in the world. How do you summon that as an actor?
You know, I think, honestly, I experience the world in a very intense way, and I always have. I'm just very sensitive and often reactive. Honestly, I would argue sometimes, and so would my family, probably overly reactive at times. It's something I've had to work on as a human being, to not be an insufferable person. But it's a great tool as an actor. Things affect me deeply, and it doesn't take much for it to affect me. So all that is to say, it requires a tremendous amount of actual energy, and you're burning a lot of calories, certainly, but having access to it is, that's also something that comes with experience. You know, and working in television in particular, because you don't have the luxury of time ever on television. Television right. moves so fast that I have gotten very good at getting myself there very quickly. And there's little tricks and, you know, things that you can do. But at the end of the day, you know, I'm a big, big believer in you can do all the research, you can do all the work, you can do all the preparation, you can have all the tricks you want and all the substitutions and all the actory things that you can do. And that stuff's all great. But at the end of the day, what you need to do is just play pretend. If you know who your guy is, the way he thinks, what he wants in the scene, what he wants overall in life, all that stuff, then once you get on set, it's just playtime. You got to get in there and just, it's not that different from playing cops and robbers when we were kids. The difference is, I think, between, say, the average kid or a normal kid and me playing cops and robbers is I think I took it a little bit more seriously than they did.
It's good for an actor, though, I think.
Sure. Yeah.
Is that something you were, I guess, always aware of? Like, if I just think about the span of Always Sunny and the evolution of that character, like, did you find yourself maybe leaning into that part of who you are a little bit more, or how to harness that in a different way?
Yeah, the you know, quick to frustration about people's behavior, you know, quick to react to anything aspect of myself is definitely something that has gone into the writing of the character of Dennis. And a lot of times it's me acting on things in a way that I obviously would never do in my real life. But it is fun to be able to actually act on impulses that you know you can't really act on in real life. There's yeah. some wish fulfillment there for sure.
Yeah. Now that you've crossed that, sir, I think it's safe to say a kind of film milestone, a really good role in a really good movie, do you feel ready to maybe take on something in a substantial kind of role that's maybe slightly more laid back, let's say?
I would actually love that. I really would. I would love to play a character that's not so intense all the time. It's my own fault, because the truth is I'm drawn to that as a performer.
Sure.
When I read a script, I'm very drawn to extraordinarily intense characters. Most of my favorite performances from most of my favorite actors are very intense performances. You know, but there's also often been extremely understated performances that have been extraordinarily effective and emotional. And I do look forward to delving to a little bit more of that and you know, playing characters where even if they are intense at times can have moments of real tenderness and love and connection. And I'm excited to get something like that in the future where I can express a totally different side of myself that I, you know, the softer side of myself, which is very much there. I mean, I've been married for 14 years and together with my wife for 17 years, and I've got kids, and I have a very active, you know, tender, loving side that I have never once, I don't think, shown like in a performance really.
Yeah. It's time.
Yeah.
It is a particular thrill for me to have you on this podcast, because I believe It's Always Sunny is technically the most ignored show in Emmy history. We are an awards podcast, however loosely we define that term. And it's because your performance in Blackberry is so great and has gotten some attention along those lines already, and chatter, like, given the legacy of the show in that regard, which I know you're aware of, like, how does it feel to get even talked about in that way?
Yeah, I'm certainly not accustomed to it. I've been fortunate insofar as, you know, I run into fans of the show and other things that I've done in AP Bio on the street, and I get wonderful feedback from people and, you know, wonderful feedback from people within the industry that are big fans of the show. And, you know, so that's been nice. But you're right, the awards aspect of things has been thus far elusive. But I try not to, I guess I try to also acknowledge the fact that there are just so many great performers and writers, directors mm-hmm. that are out there that haven't even gotten the amount of recognition that I have gotten up to this point, regardless of the fact that I've never won an award or anything like that. All that would be wonderful, but I also try not to get too hung up on what I haven't been able to get and try to focus more on feeling gratitude for the recognition that I have gotten up to this point. That being said, having a performance that's being talked about in the way that this one is being talked about, you know, of course it feels good. You don't want to perform into a vacuum. In an ideal world, you're doing something that's having an effect on people, mm-hmm. that's touching people, and if you can do that to the degree that people start actually talking about the wonderful icing on the cake, you know, as awards are, it's certainly gratifying. It's fun, but it's also really foreign to me, and almost a little strange to suddenly be getting that kind of attention.
Yeah.
But it's nice. I mean, it's lovely, and I'm grateful, truly.
Yeah. You graduated from Juilliard, which I did not realize before this interview.
Oh, really?
No, I didn't. I'm curious, coming out of that, and you mentioned people not thinking you were funny, like, how did you see yourself as an actor coming into the industry? And I guess, how would you compare that to where you are now?
You know, I viewed myself in some ways in similar terms to how I view myself now. I really see myself as an actor first and foremost, and that my job ultimately is to serve whatever the thing is, whatever the project is. I always knew that I had a capacity for comedy, but I guess I didn't really know that it was necessarily that much better than, say, any other actor's capacity for comedy. I suspected maybe that there was something there because I always seemed to thrive whenever I would work on a comedy play or something like that. I would always get a good response, but I never really, I never thought of myself as a comedy person at all. I really thought of myself as just an actor who can do drama and comedy and who enjoys doing both. And I really do enjoy doing both. But when I look back on it now, in retrospect, I'm able to see with 2020 hindsight that I was always destined to work in comedy, mm-hmm. in some capacity. You know, not necessarily to the degree that I actually did, but you know, it's such a weird anomaly to be on a show for 16 years. It's absolutely bizarre. So,
it's unheard of. Like, quite literally,
it's unheard. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing though too.
It's amazing. It's incredible. And you know, I it's so fortunate. There were definitely times where I felt like I was in danger of being hemmed in by the show, and being hemmed in as a comic performer. But at the same time, I always kind of looked at it as an interesting challenge to try to fight my way out of that stereotype. And hopefully Blackberry is a project that pushes things in the direction that I've wanted to go in for quite some time.
That does it for today's episode. We'll be back on Thursday. Find us in the meantime on Twitter and Instagram at VF Awards Insider, at VanityFair.com, and on Twitter on our own. I am at Katie Rich, and Rebecca.
Becca M. Ford.
And David.
David Canfield, 97.
Our editor and producer, as always, is Brett Fuchs.
I'm Chris Murphy.
I'm Richard Lawson.
And I'm Hilary Busis. We are from Vanity Fair's Still Watching podcast. Next up, we're watching the new HBO show, The Regime.
Madam Chancellor, let's keep the gloves on.
This is not a confrontation. We're just saying what's true.
Academy Award winner Kate Winslet is our chancellor as she leads a faux European autocracy in turmoil.
We'll be watching week by week as The Regime unravels.
And we'll be talking to the stars along the way.
New episodes of Still Watching will drop every Sunday after The Regime airs.
From PRX.